Welcome to Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and Seton Hall University Class of 85. My great pleasure to be back with you today. Our wonderful millennial co-host Gina Pirro, St. Francis College Class of 2017, and our information technology expert Helena Brankovic, peer counselor at St. Francis College, are also with us. Hello, Gina and Helena.
Hey there, Brother Greg.
Hi, Brother Greg.
The purpose of Thank God for Monday is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcomes. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. Now, this is a very, very special week at WSOU and Seton Hall University. Wednesday, April 14, the 73rd birthday of WSOU Seton Hall Pirate Radio. Happy birthday, WSOU. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a most special guest. His real name is John Kelly, but he's much better known around these circles as Jack WSOU Kelly. He's our station's esteemed historian. Hello and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Jack.
Hello, everybody.
Great to have you with us today. Kindly, Jack, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, I was born at a very early age in Massachusetts, of all places. So I am not a native New Jerseyan, nor a native Pennsylvanian, although I spent most of my career as a student in both Pennsylvania and New Jersey. I'm a graduate of Seton Hall University, class of 1966. After which I went to work for WR New York for a very short time. I had previously worked for them as a relief engineer. Uncle Sam came calling, and for the next 23 years, I spent my time in the United States Army. I retired in 1989, so I'm a double or triple retiree. And after that, I did a bunch of jobs in industry, working building equipment as a manufacturing project manager, and I did a lot of software work. So my WSOU training came in handy because I did a lot of awful, strange technical things while I was in the Army, as well as afterwards. Most people think I'm an engineer, but of course Seton Hall doesn't have an engineering school, so I guess I'm as close as you'd get to it.
We are so blessed, Jack, to have someone of your ilk today on Thank God for Monday. We're so blessed. We have an hour today, so we're going to be able to go in depth about the 73 years of WSOU. And you are heading this WSOU history project. Jack, please tell us, what is this project all about?
Well, that's a good question, and that's normally the one that people use to say, well, give me some time to think about this. But in a nutshell, the idea was to do a number of things, to capture as much material about the staff members and the station as possible. We now have identified well over 3,800 former staffers who are in all kinds of industries, everything from politics to, well, we've even had a few do jail time. So Seton Hall has got the wide range of activities. Secondly is to identify the student managers. Over the years, being predominantly a student-run station, the problem that we've found is that nobody had ever captured, okay, who were all the folks that actually ran the station from year to year? So one of my sub-projects is to identify all the managers of the station. That's about four spreadsheet pages long. concerning his 73 years. There's an awful bunch of people. And then latter stages, as I did the research, I started to identify a tremendous amount of documentary and audio information that came available. Early years, they didn't collect a lot of it, but it shows up in strange places. The last one I found, which was really strange, was somebody from 1998, and that'll be fun for the metal fans, did a whole 10 hours of straight of WSOU music. So as an air check. So that's interesting. Because we didn't know it existed. And then maybe someday, although I've started working on writing it, actually turning it into some form of a finished history. It'll be the short history, because the long history is hopefully the station will go on forever. And we'll be able to do a lot of good things telling the world about WSOU as a college radio station and all the things that it's done over its years.
Well, Jack, all the work you've been doing with this project certainly sounds incredible. So I must ask, how did this great project start and who started it?
There had been, some time ago, an attempt to do some mini histories, but they don't survive. Some people have written some short pieces to put on things like blogs and web pages and things like that. But they're pretty perfunctory, basically who, what, where, why, and when. And this all started when Bill Rock, who you hear on NBC TV in New York, approached me after a number of emails back and forth and said, hey, can you find all the managers of the station? And I thought about it for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, and said, finally, okay, I'll give it a try. Of course, I was basically semi-retired at the time, so I had some free time on my hands in between gardening and doing other odd jobs around the house. So I started to delve into who were the managers of the radio station. And that started the first big spreadsheet. So Bill Rock really is the guy who got this all started. I was a senior when he was a freshman. So I was there when he started and saw him really develop as a student in the radio. And, of course, he's done this now for 1965, 66, over 50-some years. And then Al D'Alessio, who's another Seton Hall student, was a program director, did a lot of classical music programs, grabbed me one day. He lives not too far from me, and we went up to the Seton Hall archives, and he introduced me to Alan Delosier, the Seton Hall archivist. Well, lo and behold, they had boxes and boxes and boxes of material, which, frankly, nobody had gone through, and it was not yet cataloged. So I started working from some of that material as well. And for the next couple of years, I would make weekly trips to Seton Hall, to the archive, to develop information. And unfortunately, now my office in my home looks like the Seton Hall archive writ large, with piles and piles of paper and material. And then people show up at various events. Like latest was before pre-COVID, somebody got me in a hallway and says, hey, I've got a bag full of material for you. And in it were about a half a dozen tapes, scripts, things of that sort that we didn't know existed.
Wow.
So that became, okay, now how do we start to preserve some of the audio materials that are scattered about? Back in the day, of course, people didn't have the capability. When I first started in radio, at least, quarter-inch tape was expensive. So you basically re-recorded and used the tape over and over and over again And when you edited it, you edited it and got rid of pieces. So the big reels got to be small reels, and we didn't save them. But some people later on, particularly in the 1970s, did make copies of material and kept it. So now that's starting to come up and bubbling up. And, of course, people are getting older and downsizing their houses and their homes, or they're moving. And they say, hey, what do I do with all this stuff that I got in the closet? So here I am.
You're happy to collect it, it sounds.
Right.
Well, this sounds like really interesting work, definitely hard work. We know Seton Hall and WSOU has such a rich history. I'm curious to know, what was the reason that the station was first started?
It was basically started by Monsignor James Kelly, who was the president from, I believe, 1936 to 1949. He's pretty far-reaching. And this was also the period of time where the then Archbishop Walsh built Walsh Gymnasium, or the university then college built the Walsh Gymnasium, which was basically the student center of the day. If you had ever been in the old Walsh Gymnasium, underneath the Walsh Gymnasium in the basement, they had bowling alleys and billiard rooms and a number of other different things for the students to use. The previous gymnasium to that was an alumni hall, which is now part of the seminary. Doesn't have anything to do with radio, but in 1939, 1940, they built what was called the Million Dollar Gymnasium, with some interesting construction difficulties, because as the former archivist at Seton Hall once commented, that had been a skating pond at one time. So it was where the drainage from the university ended up. So they built this big bathtub, in effect, in the basement to take care of it. They also had a pool. For those of you who don't know, Seton Hall's radio station has only been in two places. One end of the gymnasium on the first floor. Unlike some stuff you read, they say, oh, the gym, the radio station was in the basement of the gymnasium. Never was in the basement of the gymnasium. It was always on the first floor, even with the main playing floor. There was also attached to the gymnasium a swimming pool. A lot of people don't know that. They now have this beautiful natatorium swimming complex adjacent to the gymnasium and the Regan complex. But the radio station now is where the old pool used to be. They knocked out the whole pool, built a new building effectively for a couple of different things. One is the gymnasium serves as the training area for the basketball team, and two, it's the radio station. For those of you who are looking for it, look for the tower and then sort of go back towards the tower, because the tower is now immediately adjacent to the radio station.
Boy, this is really incredible history, Jack, that's for sure.
Now, I really didn't answer the question, though. Okay. So the story is, and in, Monsignor Kelly's memoirs, he talks about having a meeting with Harry Truman and Margaret Truman in the White House. This must have been 1945-ish, early 46 timeframe, probably 1945, right after, of course, FDR died. Now, I can't verify that. I've tried to verify the fact that the meeting occurred. But in his memoirs, he says that the subject came up of this new radio band. They had moved the FM band from much lower in the frequency spectrum up to 88 megahertz and then up to 102 megahertz or megacycles as they were back then. And Margaret Truman allegedly was very interested in that kind of thing, and they got to talking about it, and he put a bid in, effectively, because they were going to give some stations to each state where they hadn't really made the allocations, but he wanted to get the name in right up front. So he initiated it right at the beginning, to be one of the first of the FM radio stations. So in 1945, there were something like a half a dozen actual FM educational stations on the air. In 1946, Seton Hall actually submitted an application, and then it sat, and it sat, and it sat, a typical bureaucracy. They were still trying to figure out in the government where to do things and how to do it, things of that sort. So Monsignor Kelly is really the guy that got this started. And if, for those who are interested in church history, this was really about a time that the Vatican was looking at radio. Vatican radio had started a few years earlier in the 30s, late 30s, as a means of reaching out to the population to gain adherence and things of that sort, and to inform members of the church. Now, I don't know if that was in the back mind of the mind of Monsignor Kelly, because he never mentions that. But he was a very forward-thinking individual about building the university and doing a lot of things. So the 45-46 time frame is interesting, because at the end of the war, you had this huge influx of veterans with all the skill sets that they had gotten from the Second World War. And he basically pushed this through. And in his papers, which I've gone through, Monsignor Kelly's papers from the university, there's all these little notes to people. Of course, you don't get the reply back saying, what's the story on the station? Where, you know, how are we coming on this, whatever? Well, as is typical in bureaucracy and things, some things get done and some things don't get done. So back in about 1947, he started to get worried. They had submitted the application, they had gotten the construction permits, and nothing had happened. So he pushed, I guess Monsignor Gahuli, then Father Gahuli, who was the dean of men, had a number of different jobs, must have been walking down the hall, and Monsignor Kelly grabs him and says, you're it. Get the station on the air. this was basically December of 1947. So come beginning of January, Monsignor Gahuli gets to work really heavily involved, and they performed really miracles. It shows that if you put your mind to something, you can really get things accomplished. He and a few others who I'll mention in the, I guess, the remainder of the show, actually got the station up and in the, on the air in about 3 months, 3.5 months. They did some testing, and that's why April 14th is interesting, because the construction permit was due to run out, and I don't think they thought that they would get another extension on April 15th. So the history is Tax Day and WSOU are pretty much synonymous. So in 3.5 months, he got basically the station, purchased the material, built the station, installed the studio equipment that they had, and off they went. They still did not have an antenna. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the original allocation was supposed to be for a 250-watt station, which is still pretty significant for FM educational stations. I think the bulk of the FM stations in the educational side are less than 100 watts output. And that's true today, too. So they built the station. They had it. So in order to get on the air, Tom Parnum, who was the chief engineer, and he was the chief engineer, and we can talk about Tom, who was my mentor. He was a station engineer from 1948 until he passed away in 1994.
Wow. Well, that's quite a run, no doubt about it.
So they went up on the roof of the gymnasium, and he had been a radio man, audio guy in the Navy. He was an aviation electronics mate. And they strung a long wire folded dipole antenna, for those folks who are technically oriented, and actually sent the signal out over this jury-rig system for the better part of another 5 or 6 months as they worked the problem of the antenna system. Now, Monsignor Kelly and Monsignor Gahuli, I guess, went looking for an antenna. At one time, Newark, New Jersey had a number of radio stations. And about the same time as they were getting the authority to go ahead for the station in the mid-40s, this is with the Archbishop and the Board of Trustees, because back in those days, really nothing happened on the university or the college that the Archbishop didn't approve of and the Board of Trustees didn't approve of. So their concern at the time was there wasn't enough money to build this thing. So they got some money and made the station work. But they went looking for an antenna system. Well, that involved getting a tower. Getting the antenna is easy. RCA builds nice antennas. Back in those days, they built really big antennas. But you have to put it up on something, a pole, whatever. So in Monsignor Kelly's memoirs, he talks about getting this antenna from Allegheny Steel. Now, I had never heard of Allegheny Steel. And I did all sorts of research about it. And yes, the Allegheny Steel did make large metal freestanding antennas, or antenna bottoms, if you want to call it that. And as I'm going through file cabinets at Seton Hall in the radio station, lo and behold, what do I find is the original bill of materials for the antennas. We still have the original bill of materials down to the last bolt for this antenna system. Well, it was really Lehigh Steel. And the antenna was originally built for a station in Harrisburg. So all the paperwork is for this station in Harrisburg, which is I believe it's the Harrisburg Patriot News. They had a radio station. But apparently they didn't want this antenna, so it became available. However, they got it erected. They're still missing a key point, thing. That was the pole to put the antenna on. So it took another several months for them to get this metal pole to stick the antenna on to connect it to the radio station. All this time in 1948, they were doing, this folded dipole temporary antenna. But being forward looking, they put in a series of requests for construction permits to, one, increase the power to 1,000 watts. And then 2,000 watts towards the end of the year. So there was an awful lot that happened in 1948. They finally got the pole up. They put the antenna up, went on the air, and the FCC finally officially licensed the station in the middle of March of 1949. So the first air date is actually about a year earlier than the official license date.
Wow, that really is amazing. Jack, let's fast forward, please, because It's very interesting. And before I forget, thank you very much for your many years of service to our great country. But let's fast forward to when you were a staffer at WSU. Okay. What was your position as a staffer, and were there some selected programs on which you worked?
Okay, sure. I came in. Actually, I was not involved with the station as a freshman in 1961-62. One day, I guess after a convocation or some big event in the gymnasium, I was walking down the hallway and I saw this door with this large set of letters on it saying WSOU. And I thought, what the heck is that? So I went in the door and I was met by Catherine Schumacher, who was the secretary administrative assistant at the time. And she was very friendly. I introduced a few other people and they welcomed me. And I became deeply involved in 1962 as part of the radio station. So back then they didn't have the formalized training that they have now. It was all on the job training. Learn as you go, meet people. They show you something, you do something. They need somebody to do something, you're it. So sometime in 63, I probably did my first radio news. The engineer on duty says, hey, we need somebody to do the news. Go pull some copy. So I went and pulled copy from the teletype machine and clumsily, I must say, went through my first newscast. All the while I was working a lot of the engineering stuff. So I was pretty familiar with the engineering equipment and things of that sort. So I became, after a summer job at WR, and this was under the new regime of Reverend James Pinder, who was pretty famous in WSOU annals. I was named the chief engineer for the 63-64 year. So in 63 and into 64, I was the chief engineer. They asked me to do it later on. I said, no, I was spending more time at the radio station than I probably should have. Matter of fact, I know I was. And another engineer was on, but I was sort of the guy in the background. I did an awful lot of engineering work and involved in that is actually working on programs. So I started out working as a studio engineer. I did Polka Party, the pre-Polka Party, before the famous Stan Kozakowski, who I'm sure you want to talk to me about.
Indeed.
Later on, I did Pageant of Ireland. I was the introducer for Pageant of Ireland. And my tape of that introduction stayed around for probably another 7 or 8 years until it got too worn out.
Wow.
And Dave Gaston replaced me and did it after that. And that was Rita Murphy's show. That show had started in 1957. And then I did a number of the other shows on Saturday morning. We had shows, or Saturday afternoon, excuse me, shows. And in 65 and 66, I actually did a country and western show, one of the first in the New York area called Countryside. And then I was followed by an oldie show. Now, if you can believe that 1965, they were doing an oldie show. It is true. They were called Relic Rack Review by Richard Lorenzo. And I would do some of the engineering for that, of course, after my air shift. So basically I did on air news. I never did sports. I did remote engineering for sports. This was back in the days when, Seton Hall was, restricting its basketball team from playing in large arenas. So we drive around on the East Coast to the colleges and do the games there as remotes. And we'd be the only game in town, so to speak. I was there actually when the start of, Hall Line. I can tell you about Hall Line. Hall Line is an interesting story. We lost power at half of Seton Hall's campus. So they brought in an emergency generator to work the gymnasium and some other buildings. However, the generator was only a 50-cycle generator. Now, as I may be boring the non-technical people, but that meant that a lot of our equipment, which were synchronous, means you have to have it run at the same cycles. We're 60 cycles in the United States, wouldn't run correctly. So we had to figure out a way. We couldn't do some of our programming. So they started Phonosport, which became Hallline, and we jury-rigged two tape machines, if you can believe this, with a big loop between the two tape machines. So we recorded on one, and we played back on the other one.
Wow.
That is just absolutely amazing, certainly. And before we go any further, I just want to share WSOU 89.5 FM, WSOU HD, South Orange, New Jersey. Now, if we can spend just a moment, Jack, I couldn't let this interview go by without talking a little bit about my wonderful advisor for all 8 years. I was a very slow learner at Seton Hall, Cousin Stan. Do you have a favorite Cousin Stan memory, maybe?
I can remember that Stan would come to the station, and Stan was an interesting guy, for those of you who never met him. He was basically the one of the assistant vice presidents, directors of student activities at the then NOR campus, and he also taught business. He was a business guy. So a lot of the WSOU people took business courses because we had a number of business people who presented programs. And you figured, you know, how bad a grade can they give me because I'm going to see them next week type thing. But Stan would come into the station with a pile of records, a bunch of papers, and get himself established. But the engineer had to run all this stuff. And so it was very ad hoc. And he would talk to the audience just like they were his brother or his cousin, because he was Cousin Stan to everybody, and was deeply involved in what was going on predominantly in the Polish community and the Catholic community. He made trips, for example, I don't know if people know this, he made trips to Poland on several occasions. He was quite an individual, and he would always come in with some story about this, and he would talk about various people and how they were doing. A very typical Polish polka show. A little bit different than his predecessor, who just played polka records and talked a little bit. He talked a lot and played very few records.
And that show is still going to, I understand, the polka party at noon every Sunday, the longest running show on WSOU. Now, we understand, Jack, there have been a number of notable personalities other than yourself who have been staffers at WSOU. Are there maybe two or three in particular you'd like to share with the audience today, please?
You know, that's a really interesting question. There are so many people who have been involved with WSOU. If you listen, for example, to traffic reports in the New York City area, a goodly portion of those traffic folks at one time or another were at WSOU. When total traffic, formerly shadow traffic, moved to New York, the first set of people that worked there were, I would say, 8/10 or 9/10 WSOU folks. So the whole slew of WSOU people. So if you listen to the radio and you hear, what's her name? Well, now I just got a brain freeze. But Bernie Wagenplatz, for example, the voice of the subway. If you're on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 line on the New York subway and the man's giving you the instructions to watch your, which train's coming in, whatever, that's Bernie Wagenblast.
Oh, wow.
Bernie is a WSOU guy, was a WSOU guy, deeply involved with the station. He's been around, done a lot of voice work over the years. Bill Rock, who I mentioned earlier, who's doing NBC billboards and things of that sort, has been doing that for, oh, goodness, longer than I've been around is almost it seems. Here's one for you, Gina. I think your congressman, Nicole Malliotakis, is a WSOU graduate.
Oh, wow.
So as I said, we get politicians too. Let's see, John Brickley on the ESPN. You see him on the TV. Of course, Bob Lee is very famous as being one of the starters of ESPN. And for the metal folks, who might be listening, Full Metal Jackie, Jackie Kaser is a WSOU graduate. One of the auxiliary bishops in New York, is a WSOU graduate, Bishop John O'Hara. He's a classmate of mine. He started out in news, was a late vocation, and ends up working out of Staten Island and lower Manhattan for most of his time. But he is the auxiliary bishop in New York. And it goes on. Glenn Shook and Scott Pringle. Glenn Shook's on WINS. We got a bunch of people on WINS. And Scott Pringle's on INS and WR, things of that sort. Dave Packer and Dan Blackman. Oh, here's one. John Manfredonia. Now, who's John Manfredonia? He's the head of domestic church media. He has three or four stations in New Jersey, which is mostly Catholic-oriented programming.
Right.
Bob O'Brien, who is a writer of books, and if you want to know about doo-wop, for those of people who are interested in doo-wop, he's the man to contact, and he's also doing acting on the side. Joe Bilby, another classmate of mine, is an author of history books in New Jersey history. So he's written a number of military history books about military history and other kinds of history in the state of New Jersey. That's just a cross section. So we go from soup to nuts.
Wow. This is so interesting. And I'm just curious, how did you identify so many people who have played such a role in this station?
Tremendous amount of research. First of all, for many years, WSOU had a section in the yearbook, the Galleon, which is the Seton Hall yearbook from, well, I think the first yearbook was in 1924, and it was called The White and Blue. There was a short period of time in the Depression that they didn't publish. Then a couple of years during the Second World War, they didn't publish. Then they published successively from 1947, 48 to 2001. So in there was a WSOU section. But one of the great things they did is for the graduates would say, these are the organizations I belong to. So I laboriously went through every galleon for 50 odd years, and pulled up individual names. Now I was helped a little bit. I must admit, in 1988, someone had gone and tried to find as many people as they possibly could. And there were machine runouts. And they published a bunch of these names, all these names, somewhere around 880 or thereabouts, in the brochure for the 1988 reunion. So that was a great help to cross-check, at least. Ostensibly, there was a file card made on every member, but I never found those, to be perfectly honest. I'm still looking for them. Then I went and I started reading through all the various papers of the university departments that are in the Seton Hall archives. For those of you who are really interested, the Seton Hall archives have a tremendous collection, a special collection of university papers, organizational papers, and things of that sort. They also have a relatively complete run of the school newspaper, again started in 1924. But I went and read through reel after reel after reel of Seatonian, which has been microfilmed, looking for names and programs and things of that sort. And I learned as I went, to be perfectly honest, about other places to go and look. Now, the internet was a blessing because there is stuff on the internet that I would never have found unless it fell over it. That was very, very helpful. So I would get a name. I might have a town, and then I could go and look for some other things. Also, some searches just using simple WSOU would come up with, you know, 5,000 hits.
Wow.
So I could go through and laboriously go through and see what they said. There's also a tremendous resource for radio researchers called worldradiohistory.com now. This fellow's name is Dan Gleason. He has started to compile documentation on radio. And in that, he includes things like Cashbook Magazine, Billboard, Broadcasting Magazine. He has complete runs or fairly complete runs, which he has scanned and digitized. So you can actually go into his website, run a search on the magazine for WSOU or a name or something of that sort, and you will start to get hits. Then you can go and look at every one of those to see what they have to say. So I don't know if that answers your research question,
yes,
but there's a tremendous amount of material out there that you find.
Mm-hmm. This is really incredible, and it just shows the amount of work that is taken to really track down all this important info. Now, who is the oldest staff member still alive?
Interesting you should ask that question. I am not the oldest.
We weren't insinuating it.
Up until yesterday, I was under the impression that Victor J. Kemper, K-E-M-P-E-R, was the oldest graduate or WSOU guy. He's about 93. His birthday is on April 14th, by the way, the same as the radio station.
Wow.
And I believe this is his 94th birthday. But over the weekend, in response to actually a blog put out by the Seton Hall Special Collections and Archive, talking about WSOU, another name came up. And I went back and checked. And his name is Lamont. Ray Lamont. He is supposedly 94 already. So he may be the oldest graduate. And I believe he's living in North Carolina. But the reason this is a hard question is most of the people who were at the station and that I've recorded as a 1948 person have passed away. And as far as I know, Victor Kemper, who's a cinematographer, won a bunch of awards, lives out in California. I have to say, he was one of the first engineers at the station. He was the assistant to Tom Parnham. So he's one of the guys that actually built the station. And Walter Scheiniger. Now, I've never been able, if somebody can find Walter Scheiniger for me, I would really be happy because those three guys were the people that really built the station. So Roy Lamont, Victor Kemper, and as I go back to my train of thought, after the war, of course, we had a lot of people who were a lot of older who were attending college. Their time was interrupted by the war. So under the GI Bill, they were much older. So instead of being 18 years old, they were 20, 21, 22, 23. So that would throw off the dating somewhat. Also, there are some people who may have been on the station in 1948, and there is no 1948 roster. The closest roster I can find in terms of graduate people is 1949, where people mentioned that they were part of the station in the Galleon. So it's possible that anybody who graduated in 49, 50, 51 could be much older, and I just haven't picked up on that yet. That's a, in the job jar, so to speak, is go back and try and determine all the people and whatever. So, but I've got lots of lists that say, okay, this individual is deceased, and this is the year they were deceased, whatever. If somebody wants to really help me, I'll be more than happy to send them the list of people, and they can go at it to try and figure out who's still living, especially for the older people.
Well, Jack, it is fascinating that you were able to get all this historical information. Now, I want to shift our focus slightly. So social media did not exist when you were at Seton Hall. How has social media impacted the operations of WSOU, especially nowadays?
Well, I have to say that I'm probably not the best individual to answer that question. I am admittedly a social media neophyte, but there is a WSOU alumni Facebook page. Of course, the radio station has a Facebook page. Matter of fact, they got a number of Facebook pages. If you look at the various specialty programs they do during the week, most of them have a Facebook page. And they also use Twitter, Instagram, what have you, even more so than email. So the kids today, I shouldn't say that, the young adults of today have grown up in a digital world. Shucks, I thought it was great in 1983, which probably predates you two, when we got PCs. This was a great thing, clunky as they were. And little did I know how the internet would spread. But social media was a not thought of. They've grown up with this media, so they're much more adept at putting things out onto social media. The radio station, of course, has had to evolve from that aspect. So where the technical operations chief manager used to be more hands-on technically, fixing things because stuff gets broken in radio stations. They now do an awful lot of social media outreach, and they even have someone whose sole job it is to do social media postings. Very similar to what you will find in commercial radio. So yeah, social media has made a big change. There are the students, particularly the sports folks, are doing more blogs. I'm seeing graduates who effectively may be on the street, still looking for a job, are doing blogs. That's one way to get yourself known to other people. So there's the big blogosphere is really something else. Some people think that the radio, as we know it, will go away and everything will be internetified. And, you know, there'll be one big blog. I think radio is going to be here for a while.
Well, that makes two of us, certainly. And I'm so glad you mentioned 83, 84, because it brings back beautiful memories. Stan Kozakowski, Cousin Stan's BA14N class. That's just when the PC had come out and Lotus 1-2-3, the precursor to Excel. And Stan said, look it. You're going to use the personal computer for half the class, but before that, you're going to put everything on the handwritten spreadsheets. Right. So he taught us to still use the green paper and then taught us how to use the personal computer. Jack, WSOU, Kelly, I'm sorry to say time is getting short, but we still have some important questions for you. Where indeed, you've mentioned the WSOU archives. Where are they physically located, please, other than it looks like, as you say, your living room there?
Seton Hall Special Collections and Archives has a formal archive of WSOU material. So that's the formal one. Informally, at the radio station, they have some material. Of course, I have quite a collection, which ultimately will be transferred over there. So the formal archives are at the Walsh Library, first floor, special collections. You can contact Alan Delosier, who is the university archivist, and I'm sure he would be more than happy to let you see things, pull things out, read them over, maybe whet your curiosity about what it is. WSOU has a small display cabinet. Of course, the whole station is a display cabinet, I guess, from the standpoint of there are a pile of commemorative records done by bands in the metal community that they've given to Seton Hall and the WSOU for display. One of the great things is when bands come in, WSOU has a large wall covering. I don't know which number they're on. This must be the third or fourth, maybe one a year for about the last 5 years, where the bands, when they come to the station, sign this wall covering. Mm-hmm. And some of them do little caricatures, things of that sort. So that's a pretty neat item, which I've looked at other college radio stations. I haven't seen that. I've seen paraphernalia on the walls, guitars and record albums and what have you, but I've never seen anything quite like that. And we have some small pieces of equipment. I have identified some of our former members who actually have some of the old equipment. So
wow.
Predominantly the material is in the Seton Hall archives that's officially archived.
It is so cool to walk through this station because we get to see just what you're describing, the signed records and things of that nature. I was actually going to ask you what kinds of things that WSOU has saved over the years. So briefly, is there anything besides like records?
Well, it's interesting. Records as differentiated from recordings. I know there are a number of CDs of programs, which we just started cataloging. It takes up two big file drawers. There are also other remnants of the old days that are hidden away and covered, and stuff keeps popping up. As people clean out a desk drawer or whatever, they find things and say, hey, what do I do with this? And we collect it up. So there's a lot of material in that respect. We're trying to figure out how's the best to store it and recover it and protect it. Then that's an ongoing project.
Very interesting. Thank you. So how can ex-WSOU staffers provide information and artifacts for this project that we've been talking about?
Okay, the best possible way, as you might expect, archiving is a science. So unfortunately, although I would like to keep everything forever, as my office will tell you, I've got an email address. If someone has things which they really think are WSOU stuff, and ask me afterwards what I'm looking for. I've got an email address. It's wsouhistory@gmail.com. They can send that. I'll monitor it and get back to you. I'm looking for some descriptions, possible photos, photo shots of some of the material, and we can start to make a discussion on what can we do for it. You can also contact the general manager, Mark Maben, at the radio station. Or you can contact Alan Delosier. I'll put him on the spot here. You can contact him, the University Archivist, and let him know that you have material. And they have a protocol and procedure for in-processing material. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And thank you for being so specific.
Thank you. I think that will be helpful for anyone who's looking to contribute to the WSU archive. To add to Gina's question, how can people donate to WSOU for the project and archiving effort?
Well, we don't have a formal bank account. So here again, if you want to make a contribution to WSOU, there is a place on the website, the WSOU.net website, where you can make a contribution. That's primarily for the scholarship fund, which is really a great thing. Or you could contact the radio station, talk to Mr. Maven, Mark Maven, and I'm sure that they can make some arrangements to receive in-kind or cash. Please don't send me a check, although it would be really nice. I don't do this for financial gain.
Oh, you're a very selfless Franciscan, Jack, WSOU, Kelly, that's for sure. We've saved a very, very important question for last. If people want to get more involved in this history project, I know you've given some emails and all, but just reiterate, how can someone, and would you welcome additional people getting involved with you in this incredible project?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to have some other people involved. I'm looking for the long term. If somebody wants to get involved and is willing to take it on perhaps longer, please contact me or Mr. Maven. You can use the WSOU history@gmail.com. I'll get back with you. Believe me, I read all my emails, which is sometimes not something you find today in either the academic or the business community. But I read them all. I try and get the reply back as soon as I possibly can. And you may get a very long one back from me because I am sometimes pretty loquacious.
Well, this has been a perfect venue for you then, a radio talk show. And listeners, again, this has been Jack WSOU Kelly. You now know how to connect with him if you have any questions or anything you want to contribute to this wonderful project. Also, remember, if you haven't connected with us, to connect with us on our Thank God for Monday social media. You could find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just search TGFM Radio.
Gina, thank you very, very much. Thelena, thank you very, very much. Jack, WSOU, Kelly, we could not thank you enough. You have encapsulated in 1 hour 73 years of WSOU, and I have never been more proud to be part of WSOU and Thank God for Monday as I am right now. You've enlightened us, yes. You've inspired us so much more, and there is no doubt that WSOU is poised and so well positioned for at least another 73 years, that's for sure. So in closing, what we would like to do today is to give a blessing, especially to you, but to all our many, many listeners at WSOU. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May he show his face to you and have mercy. The Lord bless you. The Lord keep you. May he turn to you his countenance and give you peace. The Lord bless you. Amen. That was the blessing of St. Francis to Brother Leo over 800 years ago. So, Jack Kelly, again, many, many thanks for being with us today. Thanks for all this incredible, awesome work you are doing for WSOU. You are an incredible role model of hazards at forward, advance, despite difficulties, and look forward to having many, many more conversations with you and participation in this tremendous project, WSOU History Project. Listeners, sadly, once again, we're out of time. Helena, Jean, and Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Jack WSOU Kelly does, you'll say, thank God for Monday.